This is the Heart of Life Pounding.
An opinion poll shows a scandal involving the British Prime Minister, dubbed as a sleaze, is taking its toll on the ruling Conservative Party ahead of local elections. North Korea hits out at the U.S. President's recent comments about Pyongyang, warning Washington of a response to its hostile policies. And Colombia's president orders deployment of military in several cities amid violent protests against the government's tax plans. It's good to have you with us. An opinion poll shows that Britain's ruling Conservative Party is losing popularity amid allegations surrounding Prime Minister Boris Johnson. According to a survey for the Observer newspaper, Johnson's party has fallen from 11 to 5 points in the lead. That amid what the opposition is dubbing as the sleaze scandal involving illegal renovation funding for the Premier's Downing Street apartment. Is also facing criticism for reportedly saying that he would rather see more people die than order another COVID-19 lockdown. Now, the survey comes just days before Britons would go to polls in key elections nationwide. The elections are the first since the pandemic began and considered to be a litmus test for Keir Starmer since he became the leader of the opposition Labour Party last year. He's promised to rebuild the party after its disastrous 2019 general election loss. Okay, now from London, let's bring in our own Saeed Pouras with us and get some insight. Saeed, good to have you with us, and hopefully you're safe from this COVID thing. So tell us about one party waning, popularity, the other one maybe gaining. What's it like there?
Good to be with you. I hope you're safe too, Behrouz. You said the right word, the word Tory, the phrase Tory sleaze that's been front page news and plastered on TV channels in recent weeks. This dip in the Conservative Party popularity or approval rating really comes in the wake of a series of leaks, revelations, and allegations against the party, in particular the Prime Minister Boris Johnson, for the following: his direct contact using his own phone number with entrepreneur James Dyson, an appliance maker, with Johnson asking him to make ventilators at the height of the pandemic in return for him sorting out taxation of Dyson's employees. Allegations of the Prime Minister having said at some point last year that he would have rather let bodies pile up high instead of then introducing a third lockdown. Also, the suspicious and questionable manner in which he procured the financial resources to the tune of £200,000 to have the apartment, the residence of the Prime Minister at number 10 Downing Street, refurbished. That has raised a lot of eyebrows among the members of the public and politicians alike. Add to that the incendiary comments from Dominic Cummings, his former top aide, the man who engineered Prime Minister Johnson's rise to power, and as well as the landslide victory that the Conservative Party enjoyed in the 2019 elections against the Labour Party. Now, having said that, the Conservative Party is still in the lead, but we'll have to see if Labour can really put up a worthy fight under its current leadership. Keir Starmer can really regain some of the ground, at least that they lost to the conservatives in 2019. The reason being that Keir Starmer is being described, at least by some, as being weak, as being too close to special interest groups, to the affluent, and as a guy who goes with the flow, not much of a fighter. But then, at the end of the day, having said all of that, we're going to have to wait and see the outcome of the elections that are slated sometime next week, mayoral and parliamentary elections that would be held here in England, as well as in the devolved nations, such as in Wales, and crucially in Scotland, Beres.
Okay, thank you very much. With that, Syed Bourassa in London. The North Korea has warned the U.S. that it will face a very grave situation for sticking to half a century of hostile policy toward Pyongyang. North Korean Foreign Ministry said that U.S. President Joe Biden made a big blunder after calling for diplomacy and a stern deterrence against Pyongyang. The ministry called the talk of deterrence a veiled nuclear threat and diplomacy a signboard for hostile action. The minister says that this forces Pyongyang to take corresponding measures. In his Wednesday address to Congress, Biden said North Korea's nukes pose a serious security threat. Also, his press secretary, Jen Psaki, later called for the complete denuclearization of North Korea. Pyongyang says its nuclear program is for self-defense amid the U.S. military's provocations on the Korean Peninsula. Well, my colleagues have talked to Kindo Shu, who's a senior fellow at the Pangol Institution, and here's his take on the latest row between the U.S. and North Korea.
It's really mostly up to the United States, you know, what kind of policy they are going to have toward North Korea, and then we would have the new kind of dynamics between the two countries and in the region. For example, in the Trump administration, pursued a grand bargain. You do see summit diplomacy between the two sides. A lot of people like that. But unfortunately, because of the hawkish, politicians inside the United States, their strong opposition, their sabotaging activity, so the summit failed. And then before that, you have Trump, you have the Obama. The Obama pursued strategic patience, basically doing very little. And now Biden says, basically, you know, I'm going to pursue a policy in the middle ground between Obama and Trump. So we can see, basically describe that as a normal diplomatic approach to talk to the North Korean side. But it's really about, usually the U.S. would, put forward a lot of requirement, a lot of demands, what the North Koreans should do, and then the U.S. will react to their actions over there.
Deadly clashes have erupted in the Colombian capital, Bogota, on the fourth day of strike and demonstrations against the government tax reform proposal. Clashes broke out after thousands took to the streets for International Workers' Day marches, defying a court order to postpone rallies due to the pandemic. Protesters chanted anti-government slogans calling for the withdrawal of proposed reforms that would increase taxes and eliminate many exemptions. Six people have been confirmed dead after some rallies turned violent. President Iván Duque has ordered military deployment in Bogotá and other cities affected by the rallies. Colombia experienced its deepest GDP crash in some five decades last year, and the coronavirus pandemic has also increased the unemployment rate. Tens of thousands of people have rallied in the Canadian city of Montreal to protest coronavirus restrictions imposed by the provincial government to curb the third wave of the pandemic. Protesters held signs and chanted slogans expressing opposition to masks, curfews, and health protocols. They argued that restrictions imposed by the Quebec government are unjustified. Police made several arrests. The Quebec government had initially imposed curfews across Montreal, but said that the restrictions would be eased on Monday due to the slowing rates of infection. Canada has recorded more than 1.2 million cases of coronavirus and over 24,000 deaths, more than half of them in Quebec and Ontario. Over to Germany now. Police there have clashed with ralliers taking to the streets to mark International Labor Day, also known as May Day, in the capital, Berlin. Protesters set garbage cans on fire and threw rocks and bottles at anti-riot police. Some officers used pepper spray against the crowd, while some others used water cannon to extinguish the fire. Several officers were also injured. Similar scuffles broke out in other European countries. Also in Turkey, more than 200 protesters were arrested in Istanbul. Turkey's officials had earlier announced union workers to hold memorials to mark the annual holiday, but they had warned against illegal gatherings in violation of COVID restrictions. Thousands of people also joined May Day rallies in Spain, the UK, and France. In Paris, police used tear gas to disperse the protesters. French demonstrators in the capital and elsewhere mainly called for better working conditions, social and economic justice, as well as reform in unemployment benefits.
Over 300 marches took place and hundreds of thousands demonstrated all over France for May Day to claim more rights for the workers. The COVID crisis is hitting the French economy very hard, but not everybody is equally affected by the crisis. The 40 biggest French companies are doing very well despite the COVID crisis, but they prefer to pay benefits for their shareholders rather than improving working conditions. So the main concern for French trade unions now is to save jobs and to stop companies from firing workers.
The big companies have received a lot of public money without any social ecological conditions to fulfill. Public money cannot be given to companies that fire workers continue to pollute, companies that relocate. So we demand that strict conditions be imposed before giving public aid to companies.
The COVID crisis has highlighted the importance of ordinary workers for the French economy. Garbage collectors, railway workers, supermarket cashiers, mostly women, home care workers, delivery drivers, and, of course, hospital workers. Their work is now widely considered as essential to keep the economy running. French President Macron promised to re-evaluate their jobs.
Macron just promised a bonus that is not even obligatory. He does not want to increase the minimum wage, and that is for us the reference. The government thinks that higher salaries will lead to less jobs, but for us it's the opposite. Higher salaries will boost the economy and create more jobs.
The demonstration in Paris was closely monitored by the police. Clashes broke out when more radical demonstrators threw stones and bottles to the police officers who charged and fired tear gas. There is a lot of frustration among working people. Many blame the French authorities for its disengagement from the public sector, especially the hospital sector, which is crucial to get the coronavirus under control.
The anger is still growing among working people. Those at the front line against the coronavirus demand a permanent upgrade of their jobs, salary and working conditions. But the French government, till now, has only paid them bonuses once. Chris Den Hunt, Paris.
Protesters have staged rallies to commemorate International Workers' Day across the U.S. as well. Marchers saying that the coronavirus era is sharply increasing inequality, and poverty gives them even more reasons to demand their rights as workers. From Chicago, Rami Mazzari has a report.
Across the world, and even in the United States, people took to the streets to celebrate International Workers' Day, May 1st. The turbulent 2020 saw America reverse 50 years of political apathy. Marchers say the time for the lower and middle classes to unite is now, because the 1% is already united and profiting from soaring post-lockdown inequalities every day.
I do think that there will be a rise of leftism because, you know, when we're able to win certain gains through struggles like Black Lives Matter has, you know, getting Chauvin convicted, that shows the power of the working class to fight for more. And, you know, this is just the beginning of the mobilizations I think we're going to see.
Given the status of Chicago as the ideological center of neoliberal thought, many may be surprised that the epicenter of the very first May Day ever was Chicago. In 1886, 100,000 Chicagoan leftists peacefully took to the streets to demand an 8-hour working day and were met with deadly police violence. The U.S. government failed to replace May Day with an attempt at Law and Order Day, but by 1890, the first International Workers' Day for Unity and Solidarity was declared. The holiday is celebrated in scores of countries and often called Labor Day, but most English-language countries celebrate their own Labor Day in autumn.
This is a day where we're connecting lots of struggles that are important to the workers' movement, right? Immigrants' rights, the defunding the police, the Black Lives Matter explosion of the last year, right? The uprising has shown that there is really a fighting mood within the U.S., the workers' movement in general.
Many 19th-century struggles are still being fought today, such as against the privileges and parasitism created by monarchies. New U.S. President Joe Biden just rejected a $15 per hour minimum wage, even though wages haven't been hiked since 2009 and non-governmental estimates of inflation are 10% annually. Businesses like Amazon are dubbed innovation heroes in the mainstream media, yet are notorious for grueling working conditions. Many marching on May Day also oppose Western liberal democracy, which is often accused of creating and protecting a new aristocracy on the backs of the average worker. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
In other news, hundreds of people have marched in Myanmar's financial capital, Yangon, to call for a spring revolution against the ruling junta. Protesters chanted pro-democracy slogans and pledged to bring down what they called the military dictatorship. They also held up three-finger salutes that have become a symbol of defiance against coup leaders. Myanmar has witnessed nationwide protests since the military ousted the former elected government on February the 1st. The rallies have faced deadly crackdown, which has reportedly killed some 760 people. The UN Security Council has called for the restoration of democracy and release of all political prisoners in the country. Well, that's all I had for you in this broadcast.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Aperture.
Welcome back to Aperture, everyone. First part of the documentary witnessed the rise and fall of gold used as currency throughout human civilization, from first gold coins in Lydia to their dominance of over 1,000 years in the Byzantine Empire. But what role does gold play in the modern international economic arena? And how has it made a comeback after the dollar took over for about half a century?
Under the gold standard, in which money is issued based on the reserved gold, the prices of commodities are more stable, because the government cannot simply issue more money. Also, trade deficits remain under control. Trade deficits under the gold standard refer to the effect of domestic gold transferring over to other countries due to an increase in revenue. If there is less gold, less money is issued. With less money, consumption and income automatically decrease. Export relatively increases, and the country sees a surplus in trade. Under the gold standard, the value of money is very stable unless the amount of gold drastically increases. However, because of this, the gold era collapsed. The gold standard, in which issued money is tied to gold. When the economy began to grow rapidly, thanks to the Industrial Revolution, the amount of money needed to grow as well. However, because of the limited amount of gold, sufficient amount of money could not be issued. This problem became more evident during World War I. The countries that participated in the war had to issue large sums of money to fund the war. One by one, they began to discard the gold standard. The gold standard faced another crisis during the Great Depression. As countries began to exchange foreign currency for gold in fear of the never-ending depression, it led to disputes over gold.
As it has endured,
we'll revive and we'll prosper.
In 1933, President Roosevelt nullified the gold standard, and more countries began to discard it. After World War II, the world's gold gathered in the U.S., and the gold standard was gradually disappearing. In 1944, each country's representative gathered in Bretton Woods, USA. 44 countries participated, but it was actually a battle between England and the U.S., and in the end, the U.S. won. Since then, the dollar became the key currency of the world. It was a defining moment for the U.S., as it became the empire of finances. However, during the Vietnam War, the dollar faced a crisis. More money was issued to fund the war, which led to increased prices and deficits. When the value of the dollar plunged, each country began to ask for gold conversion. It was the first crisis that the dollar had faced. In 1971, U.S. President Nixon declared the prohibition of gold conversion. He no longer allowed exchanging dollars for gold. Along with the Nixon shock, the era of gold ended and the Bretton Woods Agreement collapsed. The financial system in use today is the result of the Nixon shock. The U.S. is still home to the largest economy, maintains the dollar as the international currency, and other countries put their destinies in the hands of the dollar. The U.S., which had abandoned gold, now had the power to issue as many dollars as they wanted. The Asian Asian financial crisis in 1997 that drove Hong Kong, Taiwan, and Korea to the edge of a cliff was the result of the U.S. recklessly issuing dollars. The reckless printing of the dollar can threaten any given country. This is all possible because of the absence of gold as a standard. The gold and the dollar, which were linked together at one point, now were on diverging paths. The ups and downs of civilizations and currency have a special relationship. If a strong civilization appears, its currency becomes strong as well. And if the currency value falls, the civilization also wanes. Whether they were coins or paper money, overissuance of money always led to the collapse of an empire.
A powerful government means powerful economy. The reason why the government is powerful because the economic system is so strong and the people work hard, make money, pay the tax. So the government can get more and more tax, which has a lot of wealth and a lot of spending power, which keep the government strong, keep the country or empire strong. But why such system can have a stronger economy compared to others? I think money is a big issue. It's a very important.
Ancient Rome is the representative case where the empire's history followed the ups and downs of currency. Once ancient Rome expanded to the Mediterranean Sea, the circulation range of the currency did as well. The expansion of the local currency led to stronger national power through the acquisition of local resources. Periods of stable prices and a booming economy coincide with the peak of the Roman Empire. In 54 AD, the peaceful reign of the Roman Empire ended under Emperor Nero. Nero reduced the amount of gold used in coins and made thinner, smaller ones. His successors also degraded the coins, and the value of money plunged. The currency system completely collapsed, and the government had to collect taxes through goods and services instead of money. The strong empire had reverted back to the time of the exchange of goods. In 476 AD, the thousand-year-old civilization of the Roman Empire collapsed. Even after the collapse of the Western Roman Empire, the Byzantine Empire continued to flourish and survived for another 1,000 years. The secret to the survival of the Byzantine Empire, despite frequent battles, was the bezant, the Byzantine coin. However, after the Crusades, even the value of the bezant plunged. In 1453, the Byzantine Empire fell when the last bazaar was used up. The Byzantine Empire disappeared along with the Byzant, and the Ottoman Turks became the rulers of a new empire. The special relationship between the fall of a currency and an empire can also be seen in China. During the Bukong dynasty, people in Sichuan made coins out of iron. At the time, about 20,000 iron coins were needed to buy a roll of fabric. A carriage was needed just to buy a roll of fabric. So in order to solve this problem, the world's first paper money, Gyoja, was invented using iron coins as collateral. However, 100 years later, due to the government's overissuance of money, the world's first paper money disappeared. Once the currency system collapsed, the Song dynasty lost its military and political power and collapsed under the Mongolian invasion. The Yuan dynasty that watched the Song dynasty's fall issued gyocho, based on silver, and created a stable currency system. However, the problem was the endless wars. Every time it faced financial difficulties, the government overissued gyocho, and the currency system collapsed. Once the currency system collapsed, the Yuan dynasty fell like all other empires. The national crisis shook the trust in currency, and the failure of the currency system led to the collapse of an empire. A strong currency and a strong empire were the two pillars that drove history. New York, USA. The Federal Reserve Bank on Wall Street houses the world's largest gold safe. In the 122 gold safes that are located 24 meters underground is gold that other governments, central banks, and international organizations entrusted. After the gold standard disappeared, gold that lost its place to the dollar disappeared into the dark. Then, what backs the value of currency? It's the world's key currency that is the foundation of international trade and transactions. The source of that power is in national strength. The British pound dominated the world's economy for 100 years. And then the US dollar took over. It was the result of the currency war among nations.
Oftentimes, over time in history, you find that as countries change in their economic power, the UK and then the US, reserve currencies change. But I think we're moving to a world where there's a lot more engines of growth, and it makes sense to have multiple reserve currencies. So this is a function not just of the United States, but really of the changing world economy. But it does mean, though, for the United States, if other currencies are used as reserve holdings, then there will be a relative fall in the demand for the dollar as a foreign exchange reserve holding, and that's worrisome if the U.S. has a lot of debt to sell.
The Byzantine bezant, 700 years. The British pound, 100 years. These are the number of years these key currencies dominated the world. Then, how much longer will the dollar rule the world? People's fantasy about the dollar shattered in September 2008. The financial crisis that originated from the U.S. left the world in fear, and people immediately rushed to obtain gold. The moment greed turned to fear, the emperor, sleeping in the dark, awoke from its slumber. After 40 years of sleep, gold has returned. The price of gold rose 22 times in 2010, which is a record within a given year. Now the world is rushing out to buy gold. The central banks of each country bought 216 tons of gold just in the first half of 2011. The price of gold is skyrocketing, and the U.S. and the dollar is plunging endlessly.
Even before the financial crisis, there were trends underway which meant it made it likely that the U.S. would not play as dominant a role in international finance as it has in recent decades. You had the creation of the euro, a currency for a very large economic area, and the euro was beginning to play a larger role. In addition, you've got the emergence of China, already the second largest economy in the world and growing very rapidly, that makes it natural that over time, as Chinese financial markets develop, as they open up their capital markets, then I think we will see the renminbi play a larger role as well.
Just as it defeated England at the Bretton Woods Conference, defeated France via the Nixon shock, put Germany and Japan under control, will the U.S. be able to win the currency war once again?
Well, the United States is now in relative decline to the rest of the world. As you probably know, the 19th century was the century of the U.K. It went into decline during the 20th century, and it's no longer anywhere near the major economy in the world. The 20th century was the century of the U.S. We're now in relative decline, too. The largest creditor nations in the world now are China, Korea, Japan, Hong Kong, Taiwan, Singapore. The assets and the money, the wealth, is in Asia now. The United States is the largest debtor nation, not just the largest debtor nation in the world, we're the largest debtor nation in the history.
Once the U.S., the financial empire built on debt and the power of the dollar, began to shake, the world began to debate about the new key currency. The one that's receiving the most attention is gold, that it has returned after 40 years. Is gold the omnipotent currency that will bring stability back, or is it just a mirage?
Well, the fundamental dilemma for somebody that's thinking of holding gold is that gold does not produce an income. Now, I mentioned art. Art does not produce an income, but it gives you a mental income. It gives you a psychological income. Common stocks, equities, or bonds, they give you a financial income. Gold doesn't do that. What gold does do is it gives you some security.
So as it stands today, we think gold is undervalued by a pretty good margin. We don't know if 10,000 is the target, but we do think that the difference between $1,500 and $10,000 an ounce represents the degree of inflation, true inflation, that we've seen in the currency. Now, if we were to use the same formula that we used from 1945 to 1971, the price of gold would be $10,000 an ounce.
Gold versus the dollar. The currency war has already begun. Gold is stable, but its production is limited. On the other hand, the dollar, with no restriction in production, has lost its stability. The gold standard was discarded 40 years ago after the Nixon shock. Will the era of gold return?
So I don't see gold coming back anytime soon. But if we had a serious crisis and there was nothing else, people might grab for the gold standard. But remember, the gold standard has many flaws as well.
I do not see gold playing an official part of a formal payment system. It's not convenient to exchange. It's not as stable in value as a basket of national currencies.
I think there's a pretty good chance that the gold standard will come back, although timing is a very difficult thing to try to handicap. It may come as a result of policy, but in practical terms, it's probably going to be the marketplace that drives the gold standard back into widespread acceptance.
The new key currency that will follow the British pound of the 19th century and the dollar of the 20th century. The birth of a new key currency begins from people's trust. In the midst of the world economic crisis, we are at a point where we must decide the future key currency.
Gold actually is not a government decision. We use this as a money. I think gold in the history, it's been chosen by the market. People trust gold. So when the people trust that gold or silver, so the government just use that as the money. If that's the case, I think probably in the future or in the current world, probably we should let the market to choose which one is better solution for our current problem.
No one knows which currency to trust and which currency to choose as the key currency. But even at this moment, gold reflects humans' desire most accurately. A soft, yellow, sparkling piece of metal. It is gold that the universe created. But humans gave it power, honor, and immortality. And the destiny of gold changed. Gold has written history for thousands of years. And humanity abandoned gold 40 years ago. But gold has returned. Will the return of gold be a blessing or a disaster? We stand before gold once again.
Well, with increasing political instability inside the U.S. and with the aftermath of the economic meltdown, perhaps the days of the dollar are in decline, and as history has proven to previous empires, when the dollar is out, U.S. dominance around the world will also fade away. Well, that's a wrap for this week, but join me again here next time on Aperture. If you have questions and comments you'd like to share with us, just email or visit our Facebook or Twitter. Goodbye for now.
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على خير خلقه محمد صلى الله عليه وآله وسلم. Dear brothers and sisters, you're welcome to our program For a Better Life with me, Javed Akbari. Today in this episode, we are going to discuss an important question. The question is, how can it be that the acceptance of all our deeds is conditional upon the acceptance of one action, and that is our prayer? And of course, we have heard a hadith in this regard from the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, and from our infallible Imams, Imam Ja'far Sadiq and Imam Baqir alayhi salatu wasalam, a very famous hadith which says, in the Salata Amud al-Din, in Qubilat Qubila Ma'asiwaha, wa in Ruddat Rudda Ma'asiwaha. Of course, this hadith has been reported on the authority of different narrators from the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, and also from Imam Baqir alayhi salatu wasalam. Now, there is also another hadith which says, "An Abi Ja'far alayhi salatu wasalam." Abi Ja'far is the Imam Baqir alayhi salatu wasalam, who said, "As salatu amud al-din, mathaluha kamathali amud al-fustat. Idha thabat al-amud, thabat al-awtad wal-atnab. Wa idha mal al-amud, when kasara lam yathbut watad wala tanub." Okay, this is a very important example to understand this. So I would like to just explain it. As-salatu amud al-din. Prayer is the pillar of religion. And the like of this pillar is the like of the pillar of a tent. If the tent has its pillar, if the pillar of the tent is erect, it stands erect, then all the cables and the things associated with the tent will remain there. But if the pillar collapses, then the tent and everything with it will collapse. So this is just a rough translation of the hadith. So remember, this is just a solid example of how important the prayer is. And obviously there are hadiths from the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, regarding the importance of prayer and how important it is. In modern time, there are people obviously who do a lot of good things. For example, they give charity, they go to Hajj to perform the obligatory Hajj. Some of them give zakat, and some even observe fast, but unfortunately they fail to offer their prayers, not knowing how important the prayer is. You see, this is just a kind of let's say a contradiction that operates in our life, that runs our life. How can one let's say observe fast and neglect his prayer? How can a person give charity to the poor and reach out to the needy people and forget his prayer or neglect his prayer? These two things cannot be reconciled with each other. If you are actually doing something to earn sawab, if you are doing something to achieve proximity to Allah, to achieve closeness to Allah, you cannot do any of these unless you pray. And prayer is something through which you differ from other people. That's how you distinguish yourself and identify yourself as a Muslim, and of course distinguish yourself from other people. So that's why the Quran says, of course, in the Salat Amud al-Din, this is a hadith from the Holy Prophet in Qubilat Qubila Ma'asawaha, if prayer is accepted, all other acts of worship is accepted. And when Ruddat Ma'asawaha, if prayer is rejected, then all other acts of worship will be rejected. Just as I gave you the example of a tent and the pillar which keeps the tent erect, and if the pillar falls down or collapses, the entire tent will collapse. The hadith in Bihar al-Anwar, volume 79, page 218, there is a title or a chapter called Fadlu Salati wa Iqab Tarikiha, the virtue of Salat and the punishment of the person who abandons Salat. Now, the hadith number 36, An Jabir an Abi Ja'far alayhi salatu wasalam, qala, As-salatu amud al-din, mathaluha kamathali amud al-fustad, idha thabat al-amud, thabatad al-lawtad wal-atnab. وإذا مال العمود وانكسر ولم يثبت وتد ولا طنب. So this is the hadith which I recited, which I explained.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes, and we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor 'cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
Now there's another hadith in Falah al-Sa'il, page 127. It has been narrated from the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, and his family, that he said, أول ما يحاسب العبد الصلاة فإن قبلت قبل ما سواها وإن ردت رد ما سواها. A person who goes to, let's say, who dies and goes to the other world, the first thing he will be held accountable for is prayer. The first question that is directed to you in the afterworld is a question regarding prayer. Did you offer your prayer? Did you establish your prayer or not? If the answer is in the positive, if the answer is in the affirmative, then the matters will be easy for you. But God forbid, if you, for example, say that you did not pray, then all other acts of worship will be futile. There is no use in, for example, in giving charity and also in doing Hajj and giving zakat. All of these things will be useless and futile. That's why the Prophet says, "Awwal ma yuhasab al-abd as-salat." The first thing a person is held responsible, the first thing a person is asked about is salat. Okay, so if salat, if prayer is accepted, then all other acts of worship are accepted. Otherwise, they are rejected. So there's also a hadith from Imam Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam, in Man La Yahdhuruhu Al-Faqih, volume 1, page 208, Bab Fadlu Salat, the chapter dealing with the virtue of Salat. Okay. Hadith 626. وَقَالَ الصَّادِقُ عَلَيْهِ السَّلَامُ أَوَّلْ مَا يُحَاسَبْ بِهِ الْعَابْدْ عَلَى السَّلَاتِ فَإِذَا قُبِلَتْ قُبِلَ مِنْهُ سَائِرْ عَمَلِهِ وَإِذَا رُدَّتْ عَلَيْهِ رُدَّ عَلَيْهِ سَائِرُ عَمَلِهِ. Now this is a hadith very much similar to the hadith of the Prophet, peace be upon him. The message, the purport of the hadith is the same. The purport of the hadith is the same, or the import of the hadith is the same, but the wordings are a little bit different. Okay, Imam Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam says, أَوَّلْ مَا يُحَاسَبْ بِهِ الْعَبْدُ عَلَى الصَّلَاةِ. The first thing a person is asked about and held responsible about is salat. فَإِذَا قُبِلَتْ قُبِلَ مِنْهُ سَائِرُ عَمَلِهِ. These the words are slightly different. If his prayers are accepted, then قُبِلَ مِنْهُ سَائِرُ عَمَلِهِ, other acts which he has done also will be accepted. وَإِذَا رُدَّ عَلَيْهِ سَائِرُ عَمَلِهِ. If his prayers are rejected, then all other acts of his worship will be rejected. Inshallah, this will suffice for this episode. Until next episode, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Your mercy, your love is all I need. It's all I need. It's all I need. All I need. All I need. Oh, 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 oh. Your love is all I need to be all. what you mean to me.
Cause your love is so lovely. To be all I can be. I know that you see how much you mean to me.
Your love is all I need.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.